Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today. On the podcast this time, we have three creepy stories about camping.
Camping?
Yes, camping. Sylvia Schultz joins us for another round of ghost stories. This time, the focus is on animals. She also shares a really big surprise for one lucky listener.
That would be me.
We end the show with two short tales from author Frederick Brown that are, well, perplexing.
You made that up.
Nope. So you know what I'm gonna say next. Here is a 5-minute mystery.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by the X-Bar Dude Ranch, located where the rolling Texas Hill Country meets the romantic vistas of West Texas. The X-Bar Ranch is a nature retreat that truly is one of a kind.
Hello?
Carney, this is Sheriff Slade.
Oh, yeah, Sheriff. What can I do for you?
Seems there's been some excitement out at the X-Bar Dude Ranch. One of them dude vacations at Des Sequoia.
Okay, Sheriff. I'll meet you out there in about a half an hour.
Right.
Well, here's the sheriff now. Hiya, Sheriff.
Howdy, Dan. Having some trouble out here?
Yeah, I reckon it's not going to be any too good for my business either. One of the guests up and got herself killed.
Where's the body, Dan?
Oh, right in the house here. A fella named Vaughn Calder. That's her husband. He's inside with her. Oh. Hey, it's Hardy, Mr. Calder. It's Sheriff Slade in the corner.
How do you do, gentlemen?
Hate to bother you like this, Mr. Calder. We'll just have to ask a couple of questions.
I'll go right ahead, Sheriff. I'm rather broken up, but I'll try to be of some help.
Vaughn, I just heard. I'm so terribly sorry. But maybe it's for the... Oh, I didn't know that.
That's all right, Nora. This is Sheriff Slade in the corner. This is Nora Bradley, gentlemen.
Any relation to you, Mr. Calder?
Why, no. We're going to be married, that's all.
Then I reckon you and your wife weren't hitting it off so well.
There's no use my hiding anything. We weren't hitting it off. She'd known about Nora and me for some time now. I'd asked her a dozen times for a divorce. She wouldn't give it to me. But I wouldn't have had anything like this happen. I didn't hate her.
How did she die, Mr. Calder?
She was bitten by a rattlesnake. You can see the little hole in her arm.
Will you take a look at the body, Carter?
Sure.
Go on, Mr. Calder.
We were out riding this morning. We'd gotten off the horses to rest for a while. I had my back turned to her for a few moments as I tied the horses to a tree. I heard her scream. I turned around, and there was a large rattlesnake a few feet away from her, poised to strike. I saw the fangs shoot out from its mouth and plunge into her arm. It was horrible.
Then what happened?
Well, we were only 10 minutes from the ranch. I got her back here as fast as I could. She was dead when I arrived.
What's your report, Garner?
Everything's as he says, Sheriff. Small puncture in the left forearm accompanied by large swelling of the surrounding tissue. She died of rattlesnake poison, all right.
But not by a rattlesnake.
I don't get you, Sheriff.
You had a murder on your ranch. Vaughn Calder murdered his wife.
Have you found the clues that led the sheriff to accuse Vaughn Calder of murder? The solution in a moment, but first...
Something isn't right. I have a feeling that the murderer dude at the X-Bar Dude Ranch is missing some herpetology information. Unless, of course, the snake has a dental condition known as infectious stomatitis. This mystery is being brought to you by the X-Bar Dude Ranch. The land around you is yours to experience.
And now, back to our story.
What are you trying to do? The coroner just told you she died of rattlesnake poison.
There's no doubt about that, Calder. But it weren't administered by a rattlesnake. You injected poisonous venom into your wife's arm with a hypodermic needle, then watched her die a slow, painful death. And like most people, you don't know much about snakes, Calder. That evil-looking thing that the snake shoots from its mouth is not a fang. That's just the tongue. Every snake has that, poisonous or non-poisonous. But the real fangs, and I said fangs, plural, are two long teeth in the forward part of the mouth, which are never seen. If she'd been bitten by a real rattler, she'd have two punctures instead of one.
Infectious stomatitis is a condition in snakes where their teeth rot. This could be a problem for our detective. What if the snake had one of its fangs rot? I'm just saying that there is room for reasonable doubt. Okay? This 5-Minute Mystery was brought to you by the X-Bar Dude Ranch, Texas's best-kept secret. Well, I have to say there are some sharp minds out there. People noticed straight away the mistake I made in last week's podcast. In the title, I had the episode mistyped. It read number 307 when it should have read number 397. A bit confusing, to say the least. I have since corrected it, but the damage has been done. For now, until eternity, some hosts will haunt us forever, letting us know that nobody's perfect. Most services will correct themselves over time. Thank you to all of you that pointed it out to me. I received this email from Jake McRennie in reference to this past week's blog, where I asked the question, what is your favorite part of the show, and do you have any suggestions for new segments? Jake wrote, "Hello, Ron. Love the show and content. I have an idea for a new segment. My favorite subject is history, so it should come as no surprise that my favorite segment is A Moment in Time. I could listen to an entire podcast of just that. What if you were to combine fiction with history and create a 5-minute mystery type thing, except surrounding an historical event? I would love to hear something like that. Jake." Well, Jake, I love this idea, and I've already begun to research on how to make it happen. If you or anyone out there has any ideas on how we could do this, please send me those. Just head to the main website and click on the contact tab and write it to me. Thank you, Jake. We are really coming down to the wire before the 9th annual Month of Spooky arrives. It will begin with our 400th episode, which is being recorded this week. Now, I still need more scary stories for the month, so if you have something paranormal, or whatever nature, please send them to me soon. I really need them. So far, I've received 4 new stories from Michael, Pam, Jeanette, and Buzz. Thank you, guys. And now, this word from Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? The Institute, which is a brand new novel by Stephen King, narrated by Santino Fontana. Stephen King does it again with what could be the most riveting, unforgettable story of kids confronting evil since It. Which, by the way, is back in theaters with a sequel, It Chapter 2. In the middle of the night, in a house on a quiet street in suburban Minneapolis, intruders silently kidnap Luke Ellis and load him into a black SUV. The operation takes less than 2 minutes. Luke will wake up at the Institute, in a room that looks just like his own, except there are no windows. Just outside his door are other doors, behind which are other kids with special talents. Why is Luke taken, and what plans does the director, Mrs. Sigsby, have for him? Listen to the audiobook to find out. I have found this book to be every bit as terrifying as King's earlier work, Firestarter, and you can have this book today. Here's what Audible has set up for us. They are offering us a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you can get your free book today. Thank you, Audible. And now it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Stories yet again this week, but it is this first one that rings so very true to me. Not only because it takes place in my own backyard, but because our storyteller took the time to do some research to support his own story. It comes from Amboy, Washington, was sent in by Cordell Burke, and is titled The Attack at Ape Cave. Hello, Ron. I know of your fondness for tales about Bigfoot. I also know that you live near me and were part of a group in the late 90s that traveled to the Merwin Dam area in search of the creature. How do I know that? Because I was with you. The first story I ever heard about our cryptid came from 1924 Ape Canyon, Mount St. Helens, Washington. Also nearby. Fred Beck and several other prospectors were puzzled by very large footprints they found in the canyon. That is, until they encountered the beast that made them. They saw a large ape-like creature peeking out from behind a tree watching them. One of the miners leveled his rifle at the creature, shot, and possibly grazed it in the head. It ran out of sight. Later, another creature was seen by Beck. As it stood on the edge of the canyon wall, Beck shot it in the back. It fell over into the canyon, lost forever. These two acts of violence by the humans was not to go unavenged by the Sasquatch. That night, the miner's cabin was attacked by two of the primates. For 5 hours, they pounded on the door and walls and hurled rocks onto the roof in an attempt to break in. Fortunately, the windowless cabin, built to withstand harsh winters, kept the Sasquatch from entering. As dawn approached, the creatures abandoned their assault. When the miners finally ventured outside, they found numerous Bigfoot prints all around the cabin and a strip of wood gouged out from between two logs. This story is documented, but there is no proof that it actually ever happened. Most believe that it is all a hoax. Others say that they heard the story directly from family members that were at that cabin that night. True or not, my story happened in the very same area around the Ape Cave. The Ape Cave was formed nearly 2,000 years ago from lava streaming down the southern flank of Mount St. Helens. As the outer edges cooled to a hardened crust, the inner molten lava was able to drain away before it hardened, leaving behind a tube. After discovering the cave in 1950, a logger told his spelunker friend. That friend explored the caves with his sons and a few colleagues, who called themselves the Mount St. Helens Apes, thus the name of the cave. My family and I decided to visit the cave. It is a wonderful experience each time we go. You can't really understand the dark until you go deep into this natural wonder. We spent the entire day searching through it and having a good time. We returned to our camp for the traditional meal of beans and franks and had just settled in for a rousing game of backgammon. It was then a scream broke through the quiet of the forest. It was unnatural and loud. It filled the area with dread and fear. As the sound faded, it was replaced by an eerie silence. The forest went quiet. My children, wife, and I all looked at each other in stunned silence. My youngest began to cry, and my wife quickly took her into the tent for comfort. That left my two sons and myself to figure out what just happened. Sammy, my oldest, thought the scream was one of death, like something had just passed away. I thought it sounded more like sadness. We were all talking about it when the first rock landed nearby. It was a pretty big stone and crashed with a thud. Then came a second, then a third, a fourth, and so on. Each seemed to be carefully aimed as to not hurt us, but also was a threat. I shouted out that I was armed and they best move on. This was responded to with another scream. Much closer, much louder. Worried for my family, I moved them to the relative safety of our pickup and retrieved my pistol from the glove box. I set out to find the would-be perps. As I made my way around the outskirts of our camp, I heard a bush rustle from behind me. I turned, and standing before me was an immense creature of at least 8 feet tall. It screamed for a third time, and that's all I needed. I ran back to camp, jumped into the pickup, and hauled ass back to town, leaving the camp and Bigfoot to themselves. I returned the next morning with the sheriff and a park ranger. The place was a wreck, everything destroyed, but nothing taken. The sheriff thought it was just a hoaxed attack and closed the case. But both the park ranger and myself were left with a question. Why didn't the hoaxers take anything? There were valuable items left behind, including thousands of dollars in camera gear. Cordell Burke, Amboy, Washington. Well, Cordell, first let me say I do remember you from my excursions to Merwin to find Bigfoot. I don't remember talking to you all that much, but I did borrow a baseball bat. I used it to strike tree trunks in hopes of signaling a response from Bigfoot. We did have a lot of fun on those trips. As to your story, that is an amazing one. I too have been to Ape Cave and know the darkness that you spoke of. I've always thought that if I was Bigfoot, that's the area that I would live. The deep woods there are so thick that you can get lost just feet away from your campsite. Thank you for sharing your story. It is a classic Bigfoot tale. Our next story also involves camping and another possible monster. It was sent in by Walter Flowers from Conway, New Hampshire. Our first story from this state. I was camping at National Forest Campground in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. One night after my wife and daughter had fallen asleep, I was sitting by the fire when I heard a noise. This was different than the usual bear grunt. It was more like someone sneaking in the trees. I immediately grabbed the flashlight. What I saw haunts me even now. I saw a being in the trees, hunched down. It was naked and looked gray. It was very muscular, but its legs were backward, like a bird's. Then it quickly turned and bounded off down the hill. I couldn't even follow it with my light. We left the next day. The next year, we went back to the same campground and campsite. Again, I stayed up late poking the fire with a stick and reading. It was maybe 1 or 2 in the morning when I heard a noise. I shined the light in that direction. That same creature was there. It looked exactly the same as I remembered it. It just sat there crouched at the small tree line that separates the campsites. I slowly walked towards it. I tried not to make any threatening moves or gestures. I got to within 20 feet when it just jumped backwards and disappeared. It looked like it might be 5 to 6 feet tall if it stood up. It was definitely gray. It had human features, but more like leather. Its face was very wide. Its eyes were so big, and even though they reflected light, they still looked like two intense black marbles. Its legs were very muscular, but turned backwards. I know what I saw, and I know it was real. Walter Flowers, Conway, New Hampshire. Thank you for your story, Walter. I did a little research on the area that you described, and I came up with several Bigfoot-type stories that are attributed to a little-known cryptid called the Shyman of the White Mountains. I don't know if this is what you saw, but it certainly does fit the bill. Our last one is also a story that can be told around the campfire. I love it when I can group stories together in a sort of theme. This one comes from Devin, who lives in Quebec, Canada. By the way, I just found out that Ron's Amazing Stories ranks 107th on the Apple Podcast Fiction Charts in Canada. How about that? Devin writes, Ron, I call this story The Blue Specter at Camp. We were at summer camp, where telling stories around the campfire is normal. One night, however, we may have encountered the real thing. My friend and I were walking outside the circle of cabins. It was a bright night, with all the stars shining, and the moon was well lit. There was a campfire going, and in one of the big cabins, there was a party with music and so on. We were walking when we both just got a really weird feeling, as if we were being watched. We turned towards the creek where we saw a figure, very tall, about 7 feet, walking through the trees. It made no sound at all. It was bright blue and glowing. There was a shimmery aura around it, and my friend and I both got scared. I shouted at whatever that thing was, "What are you?" We got no reply, but we really didn't expect one. We stared at it as it walked slowly away and out of sight. We didn't dare follow it, but we did run back to the group of people at the campfire. I remember speaking incoherently while trying to explain what we saw. Just as people began to laugh at us, another friend of mine claimed he was watching the same thing not far from where we were, and was just as frightened. We never saw the thing again, and I have no idea what it was. Devin, from Quebec, Canada. Creepy. Who knows what lurks in the hearts of our forests? I certainly have no idea. I do know that they are mystical places full of wonder and intrigue. Thank you, Devin, for your story. It is a good one. Do you have a story that you want to tell on the show? If you do, we want to hear it. It can be about any subject and from any genre. Heck, it doesn't even have to be true. Original fiction or stories from the public domain are quite welcome. To submit them, just head to ronsamazingstories.com and click on the Story Submissions banner. Fill out the form, and soon your story will be heard. Do you have a story but don't want to write it? That's okay too. Just leave your contact information, a brief description of your story, and I'll get back to you. We can write it together. However, if you don't do it, your story remains just that, your story. Why not make it our story? We all love a good story. But what we truly crave is a ghost story. It's time now for Ghost Stories with Sylvia. Sylvia Schultz is a librarian and author by day, but at night, she becomes a ghost hunter. Following a lifetime spent in the pursuit of the weird and the strange, her nonfiction works include Ghost of the Illinois River, Fractured Spirits, 44 Years in Darkness, Hunting Demons, and The Spirits of Christmas. We now cross over the veil and join Sylvia as she tells us more tales from the unknown. Are you there, Sylvia?
I'm here. Come on in, Ron.
Well, Sylvia, we're back again, and I'm proud to say we got an exciting episode this time. I think people are going to like this one.
I really think so. We've got some cool stuff coming up.
I'm going to lower the boom right here. We have something really special today. We are going to be giving away a free copy of Sylvia's new book, Fractured Souls.
Yes, we are.
Tell them why we're doing it, Sylvia. I'm so excited.
This is in honor of the month of spooky coming up next month.
It is October, isn't it? The month of spooky.
Right. So I decided the best way to celebrate this month of spooky was to give away a signed copy of Fractured Souls. So what we're going to do is we are going to have a quiz. We're going to make it multiple choice so it's easy, and we're going to find out who has the right answer.
Okay, Sylvia, what if everybody writes in and they all have the right answer? Does everybody get a book?
Ooh, well, I think we just have to choose one winner.
What if it's the first one to send in the right answer?
That sounds like a good plan. Let's do it that way.
So let me summarize. So we are going to have a quiz with multiple choice. You pick the best answer. If you're right and the first person to send it in, you get a signed copy of Sylvia's new book, Fractured Souls. Did I get it right, Sylvia?
I think you did.
I am excited about our topics today. I am an animal lover. I have always loved dogs, cats, guinea pigs, chickens, you name it. I love animals. I love watching animals. And you are going to take it a step further. You're going to tell us some ghost stories about animals today. Am I right?
I am going to share some ghost stories about animals with you, about ghost animals and animals that can see ghosts, all sorts of fun stuff.
Well, why don't you start us off with your first one?
All right. This first story is about a ghost horse. And this ghost horse hangs around with a ghost person. It is the ghost of Mary Wheeldon and her thoroughbred stallion, Hussar's Gold. They roamed the countryside near Covington, Kentucky. In the 1890s, Mary's family owned a horse breeding farm called Corbett Acres. But they fell on hard times, and the reversal of fortunes caused her to lose the farm and pretty much everything. She was left destitute. Mary escaped to the woods, and she just took her horse with her. She took Hussar's Gold with her, and the two of them just lived in the woods, kind of not as outlaws, but as recluses. And after 12 years of living in the woods, Mary was discovered by two men from Lexington, Kentucky, who they kind of outed her. They started spreading the word of this woman who lived in the woods with this gorgeous thoroughbred stallion horse. People started kind of encroaching on her privacy. Some of her relatives even tracked her down, but she wanted nothing to do with her relatives, friends, former people that she knew. She didn't want anything to do with any of them. She just lived the rest of her life in the forest with her beautiful, beloved horse. Her ghost and that of Hussar's Gold have been spotted by dozens of people over the years. Mary Wheeldon, she appears wearing a calico dress, and she's just walking slowly next to her beloved horse. They're just out for a walk in the woods. They haunt the country about 30 miles northwest of Covington, which is the northern tip of Kentucky, kind of up by the Ohio River.
How long has this been going on?
She passed away in the early 20th century. So, her ghost has been sighted ever since then.
So for about 100 years.
Yeah, she just wanted to be left alone with her horse and the memories of what she once had. She once had a thriving horse breeding outfit, and it was all taken away from her. All she had left was her horse.
Has there been any documentation, pictures, EVPs, anything like that? Any kind of evidence?
Unfortunately not. It's all hearsay. Yeah, but that would be so cool to see the spirit of a horse. I actually did see a photograph. This is a very quick story, but I saw a photograph of, I was at Alton Penitentiary in Alton, Illinois, and the penitentiary is pretty much gone. There's like a wall left, but it was used as a prisoner of war prison in the Civil War. And somebody showed me a picture that they had taken in the parking lot of a cavalry soldier coming towards them, and you can see the horse and the rider in this photograph that she took.
Oh, that's incredible.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. When you're out ghost hunting, what is the most important thing to you? Is it the evidence or is it the experience?
It's the experience. Evidence is wonderful, but it doesn't always happen. But it's the experience of being there. It's completely subjective sometimes. You can have an experience and you have nothing to show for it but your feelings. But that's just as important. There are other people that do more research than I do. They have the fun toys. They have the meters and the good cameras and everything, and they try to get evidence. I consider myself more of a paranormal reporter. Hmm. I go out there and I have the experiences, and that is what I love to share with people, the stories, the feelings. That's what I love sharing. And if there's evidence, that's just a bonus.
Do you think you'll ever write a book of just your experiences? No evidence, no ghosties, no EVPs, no videos, nothing. Just your experiences. Do you think you'll ever do a book like that?
Ron, as a matter of fact, a couple weeks ago, I had just that very idea.
Wow, are we on the same wavelength or what?
We are. Yeah, I was thinking about all these wonderful stories that I've shared with people on Lights Out and all the exciting episodes that are coming up on Lights Out. And I thought, well, you know, what would be really neat is just to do an entire book of these stories that have come out of the podcast, these experiences that I've had. And I, you know, it's, who am I to write a book on just my experiences? But these are fun stories, and I think people would really enjoy that. So that's a back burner sort of thing, but it'll happen.
I personally would read it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, anyone that follows you knows that you're a storyteller, and that's your greatest gift, I think.
Thank you.
Okay, I didn't mean to take us off track like I always take us off track, and it's expected. But what's your second animal story?
Okay, this is another horse story. I grew up horse crazy, so I gravitate towards stories of ghost horses. There's an old farmhouse on top of Toll Hill in Eaton Center, New Hampshire, that is haunted by the ghost of a white horse. During a blizzard one winter, the horse tried to seek shelter in the abandoned farmhouse, but he got trapped inside by the drifting snow. In the spring of 1925, somebody came across this old farmhouse and found the horse's body inside. For years afterward, people reported seeing the animal's ghost still trying to break its way out of the house. That's kind of a sad story. I'm sorry about that. So, yeah. Yeah, 1925 is when this horse... Winter of 1924-25 is when the horse got trapped in the house just because it was trying to get out of the cold and just kind of died in the house. So that's how you get ghosts.
So did anyone see a ghost of this horse or anything like that?
Yeah, it was reported for several years afterwards, for decades afterwards, that people would pass by this old farmhouse and they would see the ghost of the horse frantically trying to get out.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. Poor baby.
Okay, so we have two ghost animals. What do we have next?
We have a couple of ghost cats. Well, one ghost cat and a cat that can see ghosts.
Okay.
Actually, in this new book, Fractured Souls, I write about a cat named Blackie. Now, after the Peoria State Hospital closed, the Pollock Hospital became home to several offices. One of the offices was called NEPCO. And these office workers had kind of a mascot. It's a little black cat named obviously enough, Blackie. And Blackie would hang around the building. He was super friendly. He would come up to people, visitors, and just rub up against their legs and stuff. And when Blackie died, he enjoyed being at the building so much that he hung around. And ghost hunters at the Pollock Hospital have seen a little shadow darting along the wall and hanging out in the hallways. And we were pretty sure that's little Blackie still chasing mice on the other side.
What is it about this hospital that nobody wants to leave, even in death?
Well, people got the best kind of treatment there. They were treated like family. They were cared for. This was a place they were safe. So, yeah, who wouldn't want to stay?
One more story.
I've got one more story for you. All right. Yes. Now, this is a little bit different. It's another black cat, but this black cat is not the ghost. There was a man who lived by himself, and he had a black cat that he kept for years and years. It was his little buddy. And over that period of time, he lived in several different apartments. And this cat was completely spoiled. Anytime the guy opened the refrigerator, he would run to the refrigerator and beg for food. And when it was hungry, it would kind of pace close to the refrigerator and meow because he knew the man kept treats in there. Now, in one apartment, though, the cat would never go near that particular fridge. There was a refrigerator in the apartment, of course, but the cat always kept a very healthy distance away from this fridge. Even if you offered that cat food, you wouldn't tempt it to go close to this fridge. It just would have nothing to do with it. And the cat just seemed to be very afraid of that particular area of the kitchen. And he would also, he was fascinated by the fridge. He would lie on the kitchen floor staring at this refrigerator. And the cat's behavior kind of became a source of entertainment for this man's friends. The man's guests would amuse themselves by sneaking up on the preoccupied, tense cat and startling it. Just boo! The cat was so intent on the refrigerator that it could easily be taken by surprise and would leap straight up, nearly jumping out of its skin in terror when distracted. Hmm. So, I mean, fun that with cats, mean. Right? I know, right? Who would do that with a little kitty? So the man eventually told his landlady about this cat's particular preoccupation with this refrigerator. And the landlady told him that the former tenant of the apartment was a widow who had lived there for years with her husband, and that her husband had passed away. And after he died, she just got rid of her fridge and her stove and just ate out for every meal. Like, I'm done with cooking. I don't need this fridge and stove anymore. I'm just going to eat out. In the recessed area where the fridge had been, she placed a small table with a couple of candles on it. And for years, she held little private seances there in which she communicated with the spirit of her deceased husband.
Hmm. And so the cat.
So what was the cat looking at?
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. I'm going to go with the guy that used to live there. Who knows?
That cat was intent on something.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, cats are amazing. I am, like I mentioned at the top, that I absolutely love animals, but I have a real fondness for cats. And my current cat, his name is Blazer. Mm-hmm. And this cat is by far the most lovable cat that you will ever find on the planet. And I'm not exaggerating. Aww. This cat loves everyone. he can't not love everyone. Even if that person Aww. Is the meanest person in the world, he'll look at him Aww. And go, I love you. And
little guy.
Yeah, he is. He is just, he is by far my best friend. Now, having said that, now everybody knows that I'm a nerd with a cat. But having said that, I do love my little kitty. All right, Sylvia.
Cats are great.
Yeah, they are. All right, Sylvia. So I think it's time we actually get to this contest.
It is time, yes.
Now, are you going to ask questions about the stories that we just heard?
No. This is a completely new quiz.
All right.
I'm just going to throw this out there, and if people want to do research, they can find this out.
All right. So, just so you know, folks, what's hanging in the balance here is a copy of Sylvia's new book, Fractured Souls, and it's going to be signed. Sylvia, what is the question?
Okay, the question is this, and I will give you all the clues that you need. There is a ghost that haunts Punderson Manor in Geauga, Ohio. Now, this is a man who committed suicide. And my question to you is, how did he do it? Did he A, hang himself with 5 neckties tied together? B, row a bathtub out into the middle of the lake? C, did he drown himself in a barrel of wine? Or D, did he stand in front of the Screaming Eagle roller coaster?
Boy, all of those sound fatal.
This is the ghost that haunts Punderson Manor in Geauga, Ohio.
All right, so here's how we're going to do this, guys. All you have to do is head to ronsamazingstories.com, click on that contact tab, type in your answer, and leave your contact information, because if you don't leave your contact information, we can't send you the book. The first one with the correct answer is going to get Sylvia's book, and we will announce that on the next Ghost Stories with Sylvia, which will come out in October.
Yes, we will. So good luck, everybody.
So Sylvia, how does it feel to have your first contest on Ron's Amazing Stories?
I am very excited about this, Ron. I think people are going to have fun finding out the answer to this, and I wish everybody good luck.
And I'll tell you what, on that next show, we will read the name of the person, where they're from, and anything that you care to put in the note, we will put on the show.
Yes, and I will read the actual story, too.
Oh, great. Okay, that'll be even better. All right, so what's up with your blog and what's up with Lights Out, Sylvia?
Oh boy, there's lots of fun stuff coming up on Lights Out, and I am doing some revamping of the blog. Going to add a couple things like photographs of fun places I've been. I think people would like to see places that I've explored. And one of the blog posts deals with a question that I came up with just this past week. I was thinking about this and had a deep thought. And I write about it in the blog, and people can explore that there. And maybe we'll talk about it sometime on Ghost Stories with Sylvia. Maybe we'll talk about that next time.
Well, I'm game.
Right on.
Let me try. So I think we've run up another podcast.
We have, yes. We've got exciting stuff that we've talked about. We've got a contest going on, and I think people are going to be really prepared for next month's Month of Spooky.
All right. I do have an announcement. The next time that we get together, we will answer the question that was sent in by Jeanette Porter from Harwich, Pennsylvania. Now, a lot of you are thinking, well, tell me about it now. And I'm going to say, no, I'm not. But I did want Jeanette to know that we do have her question. We are looking forward to answering it. So look forward to that next time, too. Sylvia, I want to thank you for joining us again, and we'll see you next month during the Month of Spooky.
I can't wait.
Ghost Stories with Sylvia was brought to you by Gladys Goodies. I always have a great time talking with Sylvia. I learn all kinds of new stuff. If you want to visit her on her own turf, head to sylviaschultz.wordpress.com, where you'll find her blog and access to the podcast, Lights Out. And now, this message from Gladys Goodies.
I'm Gladys, the dachshund, the face of Gladys Goodies. Are you worried about your pet's health? My parents were too, especially since I developed pancreatitis. They couldn't find any treats I could eat, so they made some. Our natural treats are healthy for all dogs, with and without health issues. We have lots of delicious flavors like chicken, turkey, salmon, sweet potato, beef, and more. With our homemade treats, you won't worry about the contents, because they have no chemicals, fillers, or bad ingredients. Go to GladysGoodies.com now to get your fur friend a bag. And pick them up some swag while you're there. You'll be glad you did. Remember, we have the treats and swag to make their tails wag. Again, that's GladysGoodies.com. Again, that's GladysGoodies.com.
Don't forget to use our very own promo code, RONS, to get a 20% discount on all your purchases. That is RONS. Thank you, Gladdy.
As read by Amazing Stories, read by Amazing People.
This time on As Read By, we actually have two stories read for us by Greg Marguerite. The first is called Experiment, and it deals with our favorite subject, time travel. The second story is something that you may have to listen to a couple times to understand. I know I did. It is called Century and connects to the first story, if you really listen. Both of these stories were written by Frederick Brown and first appeared in the February 1954 edition of Galaxy Science Fiction. First, here is Experiment by Frederick Brown.
The first time machine, gentlemen, Professor Johnson proudly informed his two colleagues. True, it is a small-scale experimental model. It will operate only on objects weighing less than 3 pounds 5 ounces and for distances into the past and future of 12 minutes or less. But it works. The small-scale model looked like a small scale, a postage scale, except for two dials in the part under the platform. Professor Johnson held up a small metal cube. "Our experimental object," he said, "is a brass cube weighing 1 pound 2.3 ounces. First, I shall send it 5 minutes into the future." He leaned forward and set one of the dials on the time machine. "Look at your watches," he said. They looked at their watches. Professor Johnson placed the cube gently on the machine's platform. It vanished. 5 minutes later, to the second, it reappeared. Professor Johnson picked it up. "Now, 5 minutes into the past." He set the other dial. Holding the cube in his hand, he looked at his watch. "It is 6 minutes before 3 o'clock. I shall now activate the mechanism by placing the cube on the platform at exactly 3 o'clock. Therefore, the cube should, at 3:05, vanish from my hand and appear on the platform, 5 minutes before I place it there." "How can you place it there, then?" asked one of his colleagues. "It will, as my hand approaches, vanish from the platform and appear in my hand to be placed there. 3 o'clock. Notice, please." The cube vanished from his hand. It appeared on the platform of the time machine. "See? 5 minutes before, I shall place it there. It is there." His other colleague frowned at the cube. "But," he said, "what if now that it has already appeared 5 minutes before you place it there, you should change your mind about doing so and not place it there at 3 o'clock? Wouldn't there be a paradox of some sort involved?" "An interesting idea," Professor Johnson said. "I had not thought of it, and it will be interesting to try. Very well. I shall not..." There was no paradox at all. The cube remained. But the entire rest of the universe, professors and all, vanished.
Now, for our second story called Century, also written by Frederick Brown.
He was wet and muddy and hungry and cold, and he was 50,000 light-years from home. A strange blue sun gave light, and the gravity twice what he was used to made every movement difficult. But in tens of thousands of years, this part of war hadn't changed. The flyboys were fine with their sleek spaceships and their fancy weapons. When the chips are down, though, it was still the foot soldier, the infantry, that had to take the ground and hold it foot by bloody foot. Like this damned planet of a star he'd never heard of until they'd landed him here. And now it was sacred ground because the aliens were there, too. The aliens, the only other intelligent race in the galaxy. Cruel, hideous, and repulsive monsters. Contact had been made with them near the center of the galaxy after the slow but difficult colonization of 12,000 planets, and it had been war at sight. They'd shot without even trying to negotiate or to make peace. Now, planet by bitter planet, it was being fought out. He was wet and muddy and hungry and cold, and the day was raw with a high wind that hurt his eyes. But the aliens were trying to infiltrate, and every sentry post was vital. He stayed alert, gun ready, 50,000 light-years from home, fighting on a strange world and wondering if he'd ever live to see home again. And then he saw one of them, crawling toward him. He drew a bead and fired. The alien made that strange, horrible sound they all make. Then it lay still. He shuddered at the sound and sight of the alien lying there. One ought to be able to get used to them after a while, but he'd never been able to. Such repulsive creatures they were, with only two arms and two legs, ghastly white skins and no scales.
Did you get the connection between the two stories? If not, not to worry, just rewind a bit and listen again. Fate is tied up in time and often leads us to places that we can't predict. Frederick Brown understood that, I think. Should we mess with time? Probably not. Process terminated. End of podcast. I want to thank Jake McRaney, Cordell Burke, Walter Flowers, Devin, Sylvia Schultz, and Greg Marguerite for helping out today. There would have been no show without you guys. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, just head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find an amazing number of links. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it, and please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. This helps us to grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.